Good morning, Tribe of Orchard. You have gathered. Oh, that's so good. Wow, you're alive, you are awake, and you're ready to be reset, right? Well, that is our series, Reset. Say it with me, ready? Reset. And listen, I think that this is one of those series that God is going to challenge how we're seeing some things. How we're seeing not just some things, but how we're seeing some of the, what I think, most important areas of our lives. And we started last weekend by talking about one of those very, very important areas. We began by talking about our time. And we, of course, we were reminded of some very, I think, very basic, but also very important principles about our time. And so if you missed last weekend, I would encourage you to check out the podcast and listen to it. It's an important topic for all of us. Well, today, I want to talk about something else that's very important because it's something that is found literally everywhere. All right, you turn on the television, turn the news on, you open up a newspaper, and it doesn't matter which one. You open up the New York Times, Chicago Tribune, the London Times, USA Today, even the Beacon News. And one of the things you're going to find in every single one of these papers, every story in the news, almost every story, is what's known as conflict. Conflict. Yeah, turn to the person next to you and tell them conflict. Yeah, yeah. Let some of that out this morning, all right? Conflict. Yes, how many of you have ever experienced conflict in your life? Raise your hand. How many of you? Yes. And the only ones of you that aren't raising your hands are, I noticed, some of the husbands. They're like, right? No. Listen, we all understand conflict, right? Listen, as a father, I understand conflict. As a husband, I understand conflict. As a friend, as a leader, as a son, listen, I get it. I understand conflict. Every one of you understand it because it is a part of all of our lives. And the reason it's a part of all of our lives, well, let me say it this way. John Ortberg, by the way, who's this really good author, he talks about how every one of us have what's called an IQ. IQ, but it's not what you think. IQ, irritation quotient. All of us have an irritation quotient. And in fact, in one of his books, he actually give sort of a pop quiz to help you identify where you land at in the spectrum, you know, where you land at in terms of your irritation quotient, your IQ. And so I thought we should share that today, and we should take this quick quiz. Okay, are you up for that? All right. Doesn't matter if you are or not. I'm going to give it to you. All right. Here it is. Ready? All right. First question. When driving, how often do you use your horn? All right. Number one, rarely, if ever. Number two, as needed, at least once a day. Number three, it is the most used part of my car. You don't have to raise your hand. It's okay, all right? Here's the next one. At a restaurant, how often do you complain about the food? Number one, never. Number two, only if it's cold or there are too many bugs in it. Number three, regularly, and I go out to my car and honk the horn until they get it right. One more, all right? All right, listen, here, this is going to get us all. While waiting in an express checkout line at the supermarket, number one, I meditate quietly and visualize world peace. Right? Number two, I count to see if anyone has more than 12 items. Huh? Come on now. Do not deny it. This is church. All right, you can be honest. Number three, I threaten anyone who looks as if they're going to use coupons. We all have an irritation quotient, don't we? Which means that conflict's going to be a part of every single one of our lives. The writer of Proverbs says it so well, so eloquently, okay? And he uses this image to do so. It's quite beautiful. Proverbs chapter 14, verse 4, this is what he says. Without oxen, a stable stays clean, but you need a strong ox for a large harvest. What is he saying? He's saying, look, if you want to have a clean stable, do not get an ox. They stink. They poop all over the place. They smell. All right? So if you want a clean stable, I would advise you not to get an ox, okay? However, if you want to make a living, all right, and you have to work, you have to plow, and if you're going to plow, you're going to need an oxen. And if you're going to have an oxen, it's going to stink. It's going to be a mess. Yeah, but Scott, I don't want what comes with the oxen. Well, you can't have one without the other. All right, listen, you cannot, it's exactly the case in our lives. Think about this. You cannot experience the joy of children without conflict. You cannot enjoy and experience the joy of marriage without conflict. Same thing with leading. You can't experience the joy of leading, of friendship, of church, of a job, whatever it might be, without also experiencing conflict. You can't have one without the other. Why? Because all those things involve ox. No, all those things involve people. Listen, a church involves people, okay? You take the people away, you don't have a church. You have a church building that could be used for whatever, right? But you don't have, if you don't have people, you don't have a church. And since the church is made up of people, guess what? There's going to be conflict in church. All right? You can't have friendships without people. And so there's going to be conflict in friendships. You cannot deal with people and somehow expect that you won't have to deal with conflict. It's going to happen. Now, the problem is, most of us don't like conflict. Well, a few of you do. You need counseling. We don't like conflict, do we? Very few of us like conflict. And because most of us don't like conflict, and because conflict is a part of life, well, most of us just don't handle it very well. I mean, think about what happens. Okay, most people, you've got some people on this end of the spectrum who, all right, they just want to get it over with. So what do? Well, they dive head first, right? And they end up overreacting, making a fool out of themselves, regretting it, and causing even more of a mess. Or you got people on the other end of the spectrum who do what? Who bury their heads in the sand and ignore it. They try to pretend that it's not there, and so they hide from it. And see, the problem is that when we don't handle conflict well, here's what we got to remember, all right? Not only are we hurting ourselves, we're potentially also hurting the other person who, in many cases, we care a great deal about. That's why in relationships, if you don't deal with conflict, that relationship, it's going to get stuck. It's not going to be able to go where it needs to go. I mean, think about this for a second, all right? If you were to ask the average person, why do, what causes couples, married couples, to break up, get a divorce? And what they'll usually suggest is that it has something to do with what? Things like, there was a difference of opinion, or there was some sort of, conflict of some sort. But is that really why? Because there was conflict? I mean, look, people have always had conflict, right? I mean, think about this. People have always had different ideas and ways and theories of how they want their money managed, or raising children or household issues, whatever they might be. Listen, everyone argues about those types of things. People have conflict about those things all the time, but not everyone splits up over those issues. And so my thinking is that I don't think it's so much that there's conflict as much as it's about how the conflict is handled that causes the problem. In fact, did you know that studies will show that the people who learn how to work through conflict in a healthy way actually have stronger immune systems than those who don't? Isn't that interesting? Which actually makes a lot of sense, because if you think about it, think about this, that the negative feelings that we hold in, all right, the emotional pain that we suffer, the constant battering that we endure, okay, when we deal with conflict in a negative way or poorly, always hurts us. It hurts us no matter what. And it hurts us Man, it hurts us in deeper ways than I think any of us realize. The bottom line is, how we handle conflict matters. It matters. Now, there is a passage in the New Testament where Jesus helps us with this. And what he does here is he gives us, I think, very practical and practical wisdom on how to do a better job of handling conflict. And so I want to take you there. It's Matthew chapter 18. Now, if you're new to the Bible, Matthew is the first book in the New Testament. Matthew chapter 18. Now, just to give you sort of some context here, the baby's having conflict in the back. See, babies have a lot of conflict, don't they? Oh, yeah. Everything's a conflict. But anyway, no, there's this passage, the context that is Jesus is speaking in right here is in regards to how a Christian should handle conflict with another Christian. And so Jesus addresses this. Now, let me say this. I also think, though, that this gives us practical ways to deal with conflict, even outside of those realms. I think this helps us when we have conflict in our parenting, in our friendships, in our work situations. So let's take a look, and I want you to think about this in terms of conflict in any area of your life, all right? Here it is, Matthew chapter 18, verse 15. In fact, let's put it up and read it together. Ready? Read. If your brother wrongs you, go and show him his fault between you and him privately. Now, there are some passages in the Bible that you read, you're not quite clear what they're saying. This is pretty clear, right? I mean, we don't have to really look up the Greek here and go, well, what was he really trying to say? I mean, really, what Jesus is saying is, okay, you got conflict with someone, all right? It's simple. Go to that person and communicate with them privately. Very simple. Even a child could do this, right? And yet, we don't usually do this ourselves, do we? Oh, we stink at doing this. And like sometimes, I wonder if this might be one of the most disobeyed or neglected instructions that Jesus ever gave us. Because I think we don't really do this very well. Well, here's why, all right? If you were to walk through this passage, okay, I don't think it's because we're bad people or because, you know, we just want to intentionally disobey Jesus. I think this passage, it's one of those you can read and go, yeah, that makes sense, that's good, but man, to actually apply it and do it is a whole different story. Listen, reading the Bible and even quoting the Bible is not the same thing as actually doing the Bible. Man, doing the Bible sometimes is tough. And this is one of those instances that sometimes is very, very tough to do. But it's the right thing. And so, but what happens is we get stuck at these different crossroads that we find in this passage. So what I want to do is I want to sort of dissect this passage. And I want to take it piece by piece because I think there's some stuff in here that can really help us and also help us to get sort of unstuck in the way that we handle conflict. All right, so let's do that, all right? The first few words of Matthew 18, verse 15, it says this. If your brother wrongs you, what's the word right after that? Go, right? If your brother wrongs you, go. Who does he say should go? You. If your brother wrongs you, you should go. The person who's been wronged should go. Now, it's much easier said than done, right? Because oftentimes, what do we think? We think, come on. Look, they can just come to me. I mean, it's their problem, not mine. They were the ones that did wrong and offended me, so the ball is in their court. They can come to me. Yet, what does Jesus say? Jesus says, no, listen. Regardless of who started it, regardless of whose fault it is, you go. Take initiative. Go. But man, that's hard. Because some of us have this thing within us that rises up. It's called stubbornness. Huh? As stubbornness that rises up, and so what do? We wait, and we wait, and we wait, and we think it's just going to magically disappear into never, never land. You know, this can especially be true in our marriages, can't it? Oh, it happens in our marriages. I'll tell you what, in our 16 years of marriage, you know, listen, we've had quite a bit of conflict. You know, my wife is German. I'm just kidding. All the Germans are like, what are you talking about? Germans don't. Calm down. All right? It's all right. What was I saying? Yeah, so in 16 years, we've had to work through conflict. Sometimes we both can get a little bit, you know, we're both headstrong a little bit. And sometimes, and I know it's hard for any of you to imagine this, but there are times when I am the one who initiates conflict. There are times. One of those times is actually right now, because my wife's here. And she's, here's what I'm saying. No. But there are times that I initiate the conflict. There are times when Amanda will initiate the conflict. And in those times, you know what's really easy for me to do? It's really easy for me to go, you know what? She can come to me. All right? See, my wife is German, and she's also Chinese. No, I'm not kidding. So I call her, like, she is Germanese. I said, look, she is Germanese. She is stubborn. She can come to me, all right? The ball is in her court. And then I sit down to write a sermon about conflict. Or, you know, God will start to nudge me. Scott, you take responsibility here. All right, you go to your wife who you love, all right? Yeah, but God, she's the one who put the toilet paper on the wrong way. And I told her not to do that. And God was like, go, resolve it. All right, humble thyself, Pastor Hodge. Listen, it's hard sometimes. It's hard to go to that person and resolve it sometimes, isn't it? You know, I think that it's actually easier sometimes to deal with conflict with your spouse than it is a good friend or a coworker, huh? Man, that can really be tough. But here's the problem with that, though. What we forget is that by not addressing the conflict, not only are we hurting the relationship, but we're actually keeping the relationship from going deeper. Because when conflict is dealt with well, it'll actually help us to grow in our relationship. It'll bring our relationship to a place that we really desire for it to go anyway, and yet we allow the fear of it to stop us. See, undealt with conflict, it never just goes away. It never just goes away. It doesn't disappear. Eventually what happens if we hold on to it, anger shows up, right? Anger shows up, resentment shows up. And man, when that stuff gets left unchecked in our lives, you know what it turns into? It turns into things like bitterness. And man, when bitterness takes hold in your life, it will paralyze you and it will imprison you. That's what bitterness does. See, Jesus, he says, all right, listen, if you've done something wrong, go take initiative, deal with it. And if someone else has done wrong to you, you also go. Either way, you go. Take the first step. Don't wait. What's the next part? Verse 15 again. If your brother wrongs you, go and, what are those two words? Show him his fault. This is where we mess up a lot. Right? Showing the fault. How do we do that? Well, we do it by communicating, right? Communicate, and not just communicating, but communicating well, right? Now, here's the thing about communicating well. Communicating well means that you put some thought not only into what you're going to say, but in how you're going to say it. I mean, listen, you know this as well as I do, all right? How you say something is just as important as what you say. That was good, Scott. I wish you'd say that again. Okay, I will. Listen, how you say something is just as important as what you say. Look, you can say the right thing in the wrong way and completely make a big, huge mess. So we got to pay attention. So here's the thing. No matter how difficult of a conversation you need to have with that person, here's what you got. You got to start off and make a decision that you are going to blanket that conversation with a ton of, the word is sensitivity. Sensitivity. In fact, the phrase that kind of comes to mind is this idea of the scriptures where it says that you speak the truth in love. Speak the truth in love. Is the truth important? Yes. but so is love. Listen, Christians have not always done a great job. They've done a great job of speaking the truth, but they haven't always done a great job of speaking the truth in love. This is so important. Listen, honesty is important. It's important that you tell the truth, that you say what needs to be said, but it is equally important that you do it with a ton of love and a ton of sensitivity. Maybe a good way to look at it is to sit down and say, okay, I'm going to approach this person, this individual, the way that I would like to be approached. And I'm going to have some empathy here. All right, now, I know some of you, you're very natural at that. Others of you, maybe not so much. And I know there's always some of us who go, well, Scott, I'm just not wired that way. No, stop. That's an excuse. That is an excuse not to grow. That's an excuse not to develop. Listen, there are skills that you can develop. Man, listen, I a little over a year ago, there were two or three areas of my life where I found myself saying that exact thing. I'm just not wired that way. Well, that's just not my strength. But you know what I found is I was using that as an excuse not to develop the skills that I could develop that would help me in those areas. See, it's really not a matter of whether or not you're gifted by God to be able to be sensitive. If you are, great. If you're not, there's skills you can learn, right? And so there's skills you can develop. Proverbs 15:1, very simple. We've all heard this. A gentle answer deflects anger, but harsh words make tempers flare. We know that. We know it here. We don't always apply it here. See, you can say very difficult things to someone in a way that will, on one hand, that will raise walls, defenses will fly, or you can deal with it in a way with sensitivity that will help lower those defenses, that will help lower those walls, and will help them to be able to absorb what you're saying, at least in a little better way than they otherwise might. See, if you approach someone with a conversational tone versus a lecturing tone, it'll help you a great deal. How many of you love to be lectured? No, most of us don't respond well to being lectured. Man, you go a lot further if you can slip into conversational mode when you've got to talk about some tough situations. Man, there are times, and I understand that there are times in the work environment that as the boss or the leader or the manager, whatever it is you might do, there are times when you do need to show a different demeanor. There are times when you need to show the team, like, look, guys, all right, listen, I'm serious about this. All right, I'm not kidding around. We've hit this. This has become a pattern for us, and it's got to stop now. There's times you got to be direct, but even then, it can still be done with a ton of sensitivity and love. I think maybe a good question to ask yourself in those moments is, what is my motive right now? All right, I'm going to talk to the team. I'm going to have this difficult conversation. What is my motive? Is my motive to develop this person and coach them and ultimately help them to become a better individual? Or is it that I'm just really ticked off and I want them to know who's in charge? Listen, conflict will show you a lot about yourself. What's your motive? See, so even things, I mean, man, really practical, even things like body language, your facial expressions. Man, there's just some people, they just look mean all the time. You know those people? You have a conversation with someone and they get uncomfortable, and instead of like giving you like positive emotions, they just kind of stare at you like they're going to murder you in about 4 seconds. You're like, I don't know. Is it just me or are you about to kill me right now? Okay. But facial expressions, you know, tone, intonation, reflection, all those things need to be thought of when we are engaging in a difficult conversation. All right. Verse 15 again. If your brother wrongs you, go and show him his fault. Okay. May I get up on my soapbox for a couple minutes? Do you mind? All right. I'm going to do it anyway. All right. Obviously, when Jesus said these words, there was no, you know, there was no email, there's no iPhones, all right, there's no texting, there's no Facebook, okay, none of that. But even if there was, let's just say there was. Let's just say Jesus had his iPhone or BlackBerry, that way people don't get upset because I didn't shoot whatever, or whatever the other ones are called. But anyway, so let's say all that stuff was happening back then, what would Jesus' Twitter name be? I'm just curious. Anyway, I am he. Anyway, the real Jesus. Anyway, enough of that. But anyway, I'm pretty sure that even if all that stuff was around back then, I'm pretty sure that Jesus would still say the best way to handle difficult conversation is by physically going to that person and dealing with it in person if possible. Let me quote what might be the best passage of scripture you've heard all day. Ready? Here it is. Let's put it on the screens. Email, texting, and Facebook are all horrible ways to deal with conflict. Scott 3:16. That'll tweet. It's true. We have a rule on our staff that says never attempt to deal with sensitive information, or confrontation via email or texting. Always do it in person when possible. Listen, email is a great way to communicate matter-of-fact information, but it is a horrible way to deal with conflict. It is a horrible way to convey. Listen, most people do not convey emotion very well via email, right? Most people do not do a good job. I mean, have you ever noticed how bold people get behind the keyboard? Huh? Come on, have you ever noticed how bold people become bold, they become passive, freaking aggressive. It's ugly, man. Look, I've gotten emails that have been just downright ugly, you know, and just nasty, but in a very subtle way, because there's a lot of Jesus and Christianese thrown into it, right? And so it's like, dear pastor, who I love so much with the love of Jesus, boom, 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 boom. And then at the very end, it's like, in the name of Jesus' love. Don't get me started. Don't even get me started. Listen, they litter in the Christianese language so that they can then be rude and offensive and point their finger. And so, you know, what happens is, well, because I don't reply to those kind of emails, I'll wait till I see them in person. I'll pick up the phone and I'll say, hey, got your email. Can we talk about that? You know what's amazing to me is how different their demeanor is in person than it is behind a keyboard. People, man, the demeanor is completely different. It is, listen, email, all that stuff's so great, it's so good, but you know what? It is just way too easy to share your unfiltered thoughts or to just emotionally react and respond in the moment with those things. And so you end up saying stupid things that cause a lot of problems. Man, never deal with conflict when your emotions are high. Never. Right? Never deal with emotion if you have, or deal with conflict if you haven't had a chance just to sit down and process it well and think through it well. So being sensitive in communicating. You know what else it means, I think? It means being willing to suspend judgment. Man, listen, we tell ourselves so many stories, don't we? Right? I mean, we do it with texting. Do you ever do this with texting? You get a text from someone, and it's like, it's just very, there's someone in my life, I'm not going to say who it is, but they will say, like, call me. And they always seem so angry. Call me. Who talks like that? No one's like, call me. No, it's like, hey, when you get a chance, can you call me? Hey, call me if you get a sec. Not call me. Like, dear God, someone die? What's going on, right? And so we start telling them, well, I can see they're ticked off. I don't know what that's about. And so we start telling, oh, I know what it was. It was such and such the other day when I da da da. And we completely missed the mark, right? Had nothing to do. They just don't know how to send a text, all right? Had nothing to do with you, right? So we got to stop telling ourselves stories about the other person. And listen, I know it's hard to do because our minds want to go there. We love to make the world about us, don't we? Sometimes I'm convinced that conflict shows up in our lives just to reveal what's going on in here. You know, one thing that helps me when I have conflict with someone is instead of telling myself stories about what might have happened or instead of assuming the worst, you know what I try to do? I don't always do it well, but what I try to do is I try to actually assume the best. And I try to tell myself a different story. You know, I try to look past the moment. I kind of go, you know what? Maybe it wasn't intentional. They're probably having a bad day. Maybe they're dealing with something that I know nothing about. Maybe it's something deep that's going on in here, and it's just coming out sideways. You know, or, man, even better than that, I mean, what if we could get to a place where we just don't assume anything at all, and we say, you know what, I'm going to completely suspend judgment until I have a chance to actually hear what's going on. Because, man, maybe they're going through something. Maybe they're hurting on the inside. I can't tell you how many times, in fact, I would say more often than not, that is the case. It's usually never the issue that's at hand. It's usually something deeper. Someone's going through a difficult time. I can't tell you how many times I've been on both the giving, unfortunately, and the receiving end of conflict that came out of something deeper that was going on. But see, here's the problem, man. When we make it about ourselves and we start telling ourselves stories, then we just added another issue into the pile, and we're drawing conclusions, all of that stuff. And you know what happens is we so easily miss an opportunity that God might want to use us in that moment to reach out and to love that person, to encourage them, and to help them. We miss it because we made it all about us, and we told ourselves stories that aren't true. Now, let's say you have to sit down and have that conversation. This is just a quick tip that I want to throw out. We tend to focus on the motive of the person. For example, we sit down with someone, it's very easy to say, I can't believe you judged me. Or I can't believe that you tried hurting me like that. Why would you want to hurt me? Okay, that's not a great way to have a conversation. The better way is to stick to how you're feeling. How did what they do make you feel? So instead of saying, man, I can't believe you judged me, what if you just tweak that a little bit and said, you know what? When you said that to me, it made me feel really judged. And when you neglected me like that, it really hurt me. And it made me feel very small, tiny. It made me feel like you don't respect me. See, you can argue with motives all day long. Have you ever been in a conversation with someone and they can't go anywhere because you get stuck at that point of where they go, well, I wasn't trying to judge you. I wasn't trying to hurt you. I wasn't trying to neglect you. But here's the thing. You can argue that till the cows come home, man. But you listen, it's hard to argue feelings. Feelings are real. Man, if you made someone feel a certain way, own that. Take responsibility. But I'm so, so sorry that you felt that way. I'm so sorry that what I said caused that and that I made you feel that way. I am sorry. That was not my intention. See, feelings. Stick with feelings. Well, here's the other side of the conversation. Not just sensitivity. Sensitivity is important, but you also have to have a great amount of clarity. All right? Now, listen, I'm just getting going, all right? So don't even start looking at the clock right now, all right? Listen, here's the thing. I'm just kidding. I'm not just getting started. Somebody like, really? That's just my opener. No, I'm kidding. Here's what happens. Listen. What tends to happen is we end up skirting the issue because we know that what we have to say to the person is really hard to say and we don't want to hurt their feelings, so we want to soften the blow, right? Well, that's good, but it's not good if we're not clear. It's good that we feel that way, but it's not good because what happens is we fail to communicate honestly. Wives, listen. Let's just say, for example, let's just say that you are frustrated with your husband's, lack of help around the house. And so instead of, you know, you don't want to hurt his feelings. You don't come across like, oh, I'm his boss. When in reality, you are. No, I'm just kidding. No, so what do? You're not clear. So you, instead of like saying what you need to say, you make a suggestion. Hey, hon, wouldn't you like to get the garage cleaned up today? Wouldn't you love to do that and get the garage cleaned up today? It'd be a great day, I think. Wouldn't you love to get the garage cleaned up today? And let's just say that your husband takes that and he reflects at the deepest level of his heart. And he discovers that at his deepest core, the most intimate core of his true self, that he, in fact, really would not like to clean the garage today. Because, I mean, after all, it was just a question, right? It was a suggestion. But see, now, wife, you feel twice conflicted, right? Why? Well, because you didn't intend for this to be a question or a suggestion, right? What you really wanted was him to get off his lazy butt and clean the flipping garage that he's neglected for 4 months. That's nervous laughter right there. See, here's what happens. We go through all this hard work of trying to set up that conversation, that confrontation, and then we end up shrinking back from saying the hardest part, which is actually the most important part. Right? We shrink back, right? What happens is we end up getting vague and fuzzy when what the other person needs the most is clarity. It's called the last 10%. You know what the last 10% is? The last 10%, it's that part that always gets left out because it is the hardest and most honest part of the conversation. We don't say it because we're afraid of hurting them or we're afraid of how they'll respond, so we leave out that last 10%. It happens all the time in workplaces, doesn't it? Happens all the time. Man, let's say that you got a team of people and you got one person in particular who's just annoying because they dominate, you know, the conversation, they control everything, they interrupt all the time, they're just inappropriate, and you just want to smack them sometimes. They just drive you bananas. All right, well, let's just say that, okay, what if, I mean, instead of saying maybe what we should say, and that is, you know, sorry if your name is John, but it's the only name that comes to mind right now. There's no one on our team named John. So, John, all right, John, you have a really big mouth, all right? You just shut your pie hole, all right? No, don't say that. I'm kidding. But what if it was this, all right? John, listen. I'm a little bit frustrated right now, all right? I'm seeing a pattern here. Every time we have this team meeting, you have a lot to share. And I'm not saying, you know, I'm glad you have a lot of ideas, but you like to share things that have nothing to do with our meeting, and it's really frustrating. So I want to help you to stop doing that, all right? I'm going to hold you accountable. In fact, what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you every time you do, I'm going to give you the look. When I give you the look, that means, all right? Well, but see, we don't want to do that, right? Because we're afraid of how they might respond. So what do? We soften it all up, and we make the biggest mistake in the world. We end up doing something like this. In fact, you don't even pull John into a meeting. You just, when you run into him, I'll just run into him. And so when you run into him, you're like, hey, real quick, I was going to ask you, was it just me? Or did it seem like we had a hard time really getting where we needed to go in that last meeting? Did you feel that? Or did you sense that? And see, instead of like honestly naming rude behavior, we speak vaguely and we hope that they'll get it. Let me tell you, John ain't gonna get it. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. Listen, let me talk to those of you for a second who are leaders or managers or you're in charge of a group of people. You need to be reminded of this, all right? Handling conflict is not just about the other person. You got to remember it's also about a team of people. You got to remember it's about the other folks who are sitting around the table who are watching how you're handling it, who need you to handle it well for the sake of the entire team, sometimes for the sake of the entire organization. See, here often what I see leaders do is they shrink back from addressing sensitive or, you know, conflict or issues that need to be addressed. Why? Because it's the right thing to do? No, because it makes them uncomfortable. And so they shrink back. They don't do it. And so not only, though, does the conflict not get, listen, not only does the conflict not get dealt with, and not only does that person now miss out on an opportunity to grow and to develop, but now what that leader doesn't realize is that on top of all of that, now they've started losing the respect of their team. Because they see a leader or a boss or a manager, whoever it is, that's not willing to make a tough call just because it makes them uncomfortable. Is it worth it? Listen, research would tell us that the key skill of an effective leader, an effective teammate, of an effective parent, loved one, whatever it might be, is directly tied to their capacity to skillfully address critical or risky issues in their lives. Man, we gotta learn how to do this well. That last 10% is so important. You know, I found, because I don't like to hurt people's feelings. I don't like to say things that might potentially make someone feel bad. So you know what I had to start doing? Is I had to start writing it down. I had to start putting it in writing. And so there are times when I'll have conversations, I'll have it written down in front of me. because I want to make sure that I see everything that needs to be said. Because frankly, I don't have time for a second meeting. I don't have time to go. And what, you know that feeling, right? When you walk away from a meeting and you know you didn't say that last part. And so in the back of your mind, you're going, oh, we're going to have to schedule another stinking meeting. No. Let's stop that. And so write it down. That man, I had someone the other day who came in to see me. He's one of our team, actually, who needed to have sort of a difficult conversation with me. And they came in, they sat down, and they had a notebook in front of them. And they even apologized. I said, this feels weird. And I'm not suggesting, like, on date night you do that, like, have a list. But, okay. And and so anyway, so they had a notebook in front of them, I could tell they were a little bit uncomfortable. And I said, look, let me get this out of the way right now. I'm glad you have this in front of you, because you know what that tells me? That tells me you put a lot of thought into what you want to share with me. Thank you. Now, just read it, do whatever you need to do, but just share it all with me. I want to know. Sometimes if I sense that someone's not telling me everything, I'll say, you know what? I don't feel like we can even end this meeting right now, because I feel like you have something more to tell me. Is there something more? I just want to make sure that you feel like you can say everything that needs to be said, you know? So anyway, that last 10% is so, so important. Let's go back to Matthew 18:15. There's one last thing. If your brother wrongs you, go and show him his fault between you and him. What? Say it again. Privately. You know what? What does privately mean? No third parties. Huh? It's between you and that person privately. Here is the tendency, though. Because that person has offended us, it's the last person in the world we want to be around, right? And so we go to someone else. Let's just be really honest for a second, all right? Can we? Let's get really honest, all right? Sometimes it's more fun to go to other people. Don't look at me like that, you holier than thous, all right? Listen, sometimes it is more fun going to other people, right? Let me tell you what just happened. So that I can get feedback. Come on. Listen, sometimes, you know, I needed a sounding board. Well, a sounding board is not a sounding committee, all right? A sounding board is not a group of people. A sounding board is a leader, maybe a coach, someone you look to for and you respect, all right? And there are times you might need a sounding board. But here's the thing. This is where we get it totally wrong. Research would tell us that talking out an emotion doesn't reduce it. We just say, well, I just got to get it off my chest. So let me just tell you what happened. No. Friend, it doesn't work. No. Research is very clear about it, all right? As you recite your grievances over and over again, what happens is that those emotions start getting built back up again, and you find yourself just as angry as you were before. Now, you may need a sounding board, all right? But again, it's maybe a person, not a group of people, all right? And the point of a sounding board is ultimately so that you can see reconciliation come to the relationship. Otherwise, you know what it is? It's called G-O-S-S-I-P, gossip. Do you know what gossip is? Gossip is when a person involved is neither a part of the problem or the solution. When someone is involved and they are neither a part of the problem or the solution, it's gossip. And the Bible calls it sin. Sin. And can I tell you something? I have seen gossip destroy more relationships and friendships and churches than anything else. Gossip. Do you know, I read the other day, one researcher said that there are over 33,000 Christian denominations. 33,000 Christian denominations, and every one of them was a split off of someone else. And almost all of them were born out of anger, out of hostility, out of withdrawal. Between people who claim to be followers of Jesus who said what we just read in Matthew. Reminds me of a joke, which I feel like we need right now. So there's this man who was rescued from a deserted island. He'd been there 15 years all alone. Somehow he survived. And before leaving, he decided he wanted to give his rescuers a quick tour of his little town that he had built, because he built all these really cool buildings. And so he takes the rescuers on this little tour, and he's walking around. He goes, okay, over there, that's my house. And that's the store, and that's the cabana or whatever it's called. And then he goes, oh, and that's my church. And the rescuer looks at him and goes, well, then what's the building next to it? And he goes, oh, well, that's where I used to go to church. Conflict's everywhere. You find conflict on a deserted island. See, here's the thing. As funny as that is, listen, so much of the conflict that's in churches is caused by gossip. And let me tell you something. That's why here at The Orchard, we do not put up with gossip. We will confront it every time if we need to. Gossip is poison, okay? It is poison. If you allow gossip to spread and make its way into your community, your organization, your team, it will split it wide open, it will poison it, and it will inject poison into the culture of your organization, your church. Pastors who are listening online, you've got to take this serious. Those of you who lead teams, you've got to take it serious. Gossip. You can go through all these steps that Jesus talks about and mess the whole thing up by involving people who don't need to be involved. Jesus says, go privately. Do you know sometimes odd people walk up to me in church and they'll say, hey, I need to talk to you about such and such staff person. You know what I say? Stop. I love you. But my first question is, have you talked to them? Oh, well, no. Okay, you know what? We're going to do this the way of Jesus. You go to them. I get people call me up. Or they'll, I got to talk to you about a member of your church. Okay, have you talked to them? Well, no. Okay, well, we're going to end this conversation. All right? I love you, but I'm not interested in hearing it. I don't even want to hear it. Go to them. We're going to do this the way of Jesus. All right, Jesus says go privately. You don't blog about it. You don't Facebook about it. You don't go take it to your women's prayer group. I'm not even going to go down that path. Matthew 18:15. If your brother wrongs you, go and show him his fault between you and him privately. And I love where it goes at the very end. If he listens to you, you have won your brother back. The goal in dealing with conflict is not to win. It's not to score points. If it is, you got a problem inside. The goal really ought to be reconciliation. Your aim should be to restore that relationship. Yeah, but what if it was a breach of trust? Well, you don't just jump into a relationship. You don't blindly start trusting them again. You don't ignore what happened. But the ultimate goal should be to see that relationship restored at some level. Will it be? Maybe. Maybe not. Here's what we got to understand. This is about you doing what's right. About you. Right? You're responsible for making sure that you do the right thing. You're not responsible for making sure that someone else does the right thing. At the end of the day, you'll sleep better knowing you did the right thing. Man, it's about obeying Jesus and allowing God to deal with the heart and the motives of other people. Every year around this time, I go break away for a day or two, and I do a lot of reflection on the previous year. And this year, the thing that I really came back sensing is that God wants us, and listen, this is really important, that God wants us to become people who see and create wholeness wherever we go. That we would be people who see and create wholeness wherever we go. Not people who split, and judge, and decide, and choose sides, but people who see and create wholeness wherever they go. And over these next few months, we're going to explore what that looks like. But let me address two groups of you real quick before we leave today. First, let me talk to those of you who are leaders here at The Orchard. All right, if you lead a team, if you lead in an area of ministry, let me be very clear. Our expectation is that you will handle conflict well. Our expectation is that you will handle conflict the way that Jesus instructs us to handle conflict. Will it be easy? No, not necessarily. But it will be rewarding. God will bless that. God will honor that. The other group that I want to say something else to is those of you who share in the vision of creating a beautiful, inclusive, loving, impacting community. Those of you who desire to be a part of something like that, let me tell you, learning how to deal with conflict well is what helps make that happen. It's a very important part of that. And so I urge you, Orchard community, I urge you to deal with conflict the way of Jesus. Some of you, maybe you've been at other churches where that wasn't modeled for you. You've been in environments, and maybe even just in your own life, it wasn't done well. Okay, let's just push that aside for a second. And let me just say what God wants to do here at the Orchard community, what God wants to do here is to help us to deal with conflict His way, which is not always the easy way, but He will help us. And He will strengthen us and He will give us courage. Now, before we dismiss, I want us to take just a moment. And could I ask that we don't move around a lot right now? Could we just take a moment and could we reflect just for a minute or two? Would you bow your heads with me? And I want you just to reflect. And I want to go back. And last weekend we launched this series and I said something really important. I said that in this series is not as tempting as it's going to be to sometimes say, man, I wish my husband was here. I wish my friend was here. No. This is a series about you. This is a series about me. And so I think the thing that I ask you to pray right now is just very simply, God, what are you saying to me today? Not what are you saying to my husband, my wife? What are you saying to me? Could we just take a moment and let's ask that question. And then the other question I think we really need to ask ourselves is very simply this. Is there any unresolved conflict in my life? Is there any unresolved conflict? Maybe for some of you, you've gone 80% of the way, 90% of the way, but there's still some things you need to deal with. You need to go and have that conversation. Would you make a decision that you are ruthlessly going to seek to resolve that in your life? For some of you, that might mean going home, picking up the phone. For some of you, it might mean going on a road trip, going having a conversation. Some of you might mean getting on an airplane. And if not, maybe the best thing to do today is to leave here just determined that you are going to handle conflict. Any conflict that arises in the future, you're going to handle it the way of Jesus. Listen, I know it's not easy, and I know there's some of you have been carrying it for a long time, and maybe it's been pride that has kept you or whatever, and you might even after all this talk today that even went way too long, but maybe you're sitting there and you say, well, Scott, I just still don't understand. Why should I go first? Well, the answer was spoken by a very wise person who once said, let he who is most mature go first. So who are you going to be? God, thank you for helping us in this area of our lives that can just be sometimes so difficult. God, we thank you for this church community, this tribe of people called the Orchard. God, we thank you for the marriages that are represented in this room. God, for the single people who are here, such an important part of our community. God, for the families, the friendships, the leaders, the organizations that are represented in this room right now. God, would you help us to get a picture of what it would be like to have the family, the marriage, the workplaces that embrace your way? which is not always the easy way, but it's the way that you lead us, and it's the way that you give us courage to take steps towards. And God, we want to acknowledge and we want to say thank you for the unity that you've brought here to this church. God, help us not to mess it up. God, help us to do our part in protecting that, and not just protecting the unity, but help us to allow that unity to actually become a catalyst to be your hands and your feet to the world around us. Ultimately, what we ask is that you would help us with the way we see. Open our eyes. And help us to see things the way you see them. And together, God, we pray that, and we ask that in the name of your Son, Jesus. And everyone said, amen.